I'm Karen Thompson, and I'm recording a podcast on real-time information for the AAT. After the main migration to RTI this April, the last 6 months have flushed out several issues which have been causing problems for employers and agents alike. Now, this is not surprising, as you know, any big major project will have some teething problems. But as we're now reaching the point where virtually all employers are filing page one in real time, which coincides with HMRC's publication of a report which has highlighted the main causes of some of the reconciliation problems you and your clients may have. So during this session, I'm going to look at some of the causes of the reconciliation problems, how you can avoid them, along with a few hints and tips of what we've learnt along the way. I'll also talk about some of the generic notifications that HMRC will begin to issue later this month. It was due to be the 15th of October, but unfortunately that has been delayed. And then we'll finish with a very quick look at what is coming up in the future. So reconciliation issues. Well, on the 12th of August, HMRC announced that they'd received feedback that some page one schemes were having difficulties reconciling the difference between the tax HMRC said was due and the tax the employer or your clients thought was due. So as a result, HMRC set up a dedicated team to try and identify what the cause of these discrepancies was. HMRC has now published a report into the findings from an analysis of the disputed page one charges. The report has set out all the different issues using examples that they found between July and September this year. Many AAT members contributed to this research, so this should help you going forward. So to start with, several problems with the EPS have led to reconciliation issues which have involved non-completion of an EPS where one might be appropriate, use of this period figures instead of year-to-date figures. So it's really crucial when you're submitting an EPS, it cannot be your figures in this pay period. It has to be your year-to-date. Otherwise, the reconciliation just does not work. Timing of the EPS returns is also crucial because that, depending on when you submit an EPS, can result in the credit against the charge being applied to a different tax month than what you, your clients, were expecting. So for example, an EPS is submitted on the 31st of May for employees paid on the 31st of May. So that would be month two of our tax year. The EPS relating to this FPS, sorry, lots of acronyms, must be submitted to HMRC for month two on or before the 19th of June. So HMRC's look at the charge, which is the payment due, on the 6th of June, based on the FPS data that's been submitted and or EPS data that's submitted by that date for month two. But if there is no EPS, then the dashboard, which is the viewer that many of your clients will be looking at, will be updated after the 6th of June with the known figures. And it normally happens around about the 7th or 8th. HMRC will then carry out another calculation for month two on or around the 19th of June, i.e. the deadline for the submission of the EPS for tax month two. So then the dashboard viewer is then updated again on or around 20th, 21st of June. If the EPS for month two hasn't been received by the 19th, then any submission after that will be viewed as a credit against month three. If the EPS for month two is submitted before the 19th of May, it is a credit against month one. So you can see why it's so crucial that the timing of which you submit your EPS is so important. Something that many of us will disagree with as to why we can't have a tax month put on the EPS, which clearly tells HMRC what tax month it relates to. But we are where we are. So based on the example I've just described, if an employer chooses to submit the FPS and the EPS on the 31st of May, then the system, i.e. HMRC systems, will assume month two because it's after the 20th of May. So therefore, there shouldn't be any issues. So the key message is to ensure your EPS for the tax month in which it relates is submitted before the 19th of the following month. HMRC have said when they have looked into the EPS submissions, a number of them have been after the 19th of the month, meaning the viewer is not correct according to what the employer expects to see. Payments on and after leaving. HMRC systems are calculating the charge correctly, which is the monies that are due, where there is a payment after leaving. However, how an employer or your clients, or indeed their payroll software treats the final payment on leaving, and therefore after leaving, can cause incorrect charges. So let's look at some examples. One software product continues to submit FPSs after the employee has left. And what this does is causes duplicate employments and therefore an overstated charge. HMRC are working with the software provider concerned, and there will be others that no doubt will crop up through the woodwork that are doing the same thing. Some employers tick the box to denote a payment after leaving, where the payment is the normal final salary payment, and then reports this payment on the FPS, which of course reports the first day of leaving. So let me put that in a different way. Where you've got a final payment to an employee, many employers are saying, well, because this is my final payment, this is a payment after leaving. So they've maybe left on the 10th of the month, but they're paying them on the 25th of the month. But because they've left on the 10th, it's viewed as a payment after leaving. Please note, that is not the case. A payment after leaving is the same as we've always treated a payment after leaving for tax purposes. Misalignment between tax months and calendar months. Reporting pay as you earn in real time has highlighted that some employers are not operating pay as you earn according to the regulations. They are using the payroll run date rather than the date the employees are paid. Now, you must check with your software as to what it does. Some software in the past has said that the date that you run your payroll is the date the employees are paid. That's not right. HMRC needs to know the actual date you are paying your employees. They do accept if you're paying, if the date is a Saturday and you're paying on the Friday, however. What happens then is it means the deductions are not aligned to the right tax period. So when you report your pay as you earn in real time, your FPS must report the correct payment date. So some examples that were found in the review, the FPS contained weekly figures up to week 13. A monthly payroll up to month 3, but payment was only made up to week 12. Employer's FPS sometimes contains 5 weeks worth of information, but payments were always for 4 weeks. Employees who've been weekly paid, the totals on month 1 to 4 FPSs relate to employer's totals for weeks 1 to 18, and the employer has made payments for pay as you earn only up until week 16. Payment made for 4 weeks in month 1, but the FPS included pay and deductions for week 5. So if you want to work in calendar months rather than tax months, then you may need to realign your dates. HMRC's website does have more information on that. So if you're unsure, please, please do check their website. Duplicate employments. Just over 10% of cases in the review that HMRC conducted related to duplicate employments. When duplicate employments are created, so that's when an FPS gives different details for an employee to those held by HMRC, for example, it could be a date of birth, national insurance number, a start date, or a different works number, as HMRC call it, or we call it employee number, it can lead to HMRC systems thinking that there are two different people. So please be really careful to check the accuracy of the information that you submit. Adding a new starter. This is another issue which has created problems with reconciliations. The crucial fact here is that when setting up a new starter, you do not use previous pay or tax details on the FPS, only the amounts in your employment. So whilst you might record the details from the P45 in your payroll system, it's crucial that those details do then not get forwarded to HMRC via your FPS. So if you're unsure what your software is doing, please check with them. It's also important to remember, whether you're using commercial payroll software or even HMRC's basic pay as you earn tools, that you should never include another start date on any FPS other than the very first one. Now, this can cause a problem if you've received a start date and then you find it's incorrect. And it does happen. This is the real world. But HMRC don't want to know about it. Now, you as the employer, your clients will need to have that correct date for many other reasons, employment law and so forth. But HMRC don't want to use it. So therefore, it's important, again, check what your software is going to be doing. Troubleshooting tips for employers. If you cannot see how HMRC have calculated the charge, i.e. what you're due to pay, before you contact HMRC, there are some things that you should do first. Check that you sent an EPS where one was needed. Ensure that any UPS includes only the year-to-date figures, not the period figures. Ensure that you left enough time for HMRC's business tax dashboard to be updated. So this is going back to where I said data being recorded around the 19th month, but the dashboard being updated 20th, 21st. So you may want to leave it a few days before you check your payments. Check your payments to HMRC match the amounts reported in your FPS and your EPS submissions, with particular reference to the tax weeks and tax months as I described previously. Check you've correctly reported the leavers and particularly payments after leaving, making sure they are genuine payments after leaving. Check that HMRC have not allocated the payment to a different period. If this has happened, you may need to contact HMRC. So some other issues then, and some hints and tips. Real-time information completing the annual amount of occupational pension field. This has caused a real bone of contention, mainly through lack of education, I would suggest, on both HMRC's part and employers' parts of not understanding what these fields are for. So HMRC have seen a small number of cases where no occupational pension is being paid, but employers have entered zeros in the annual amount of occupational pension fields on the FPSs. When you enter zero in the field, what it suggests is that an occupational pension is in payment, but the payment was nil. This could then have a knock-on effect for employees with student loan deductions, for example, as it prompts an automated notification to the student loan company from HMRC advising that an occupational pension is being paid. This might then result in the cessation of any further student loan deductions. If you're not paying an occupational pension, you should leave the field blank and do not enter zeros. Software providers have been made aware of what employers have been doing here, so hopefully, as new releases come out, payroll software will prevent you putting any information in this unless it is a pension payroll. But again, please check. Hours worked. There have been quite a few employers who've been using Category D instead of reporting the normal hours worked. Please bear in mind, normal hours can be the contractual hours, not necessarily any overtime hours that you would expect them to do. As this can affect universal credits, HMRC have issued a plea to make sure that you report the normal hours worked. You should only use the field D if genuinely you cannot report the hours. Generic notifications. As I said, these were supposed to be issued around the 15th of October, but have been delayed. But what they will be doing over the next couple of weeks is issuing a number of generic notifications to all employers. And the first one, a non-filing notice. This will be sent to employers when HMRC's records show that an employer appears not to have sent one or more of the FPSs that HMRC expected for a particular period. It will explain that the employer is running the risk of incurring penalties and, more importantly, what to do to avoid them. A late filing notice. This is in a similar vein. This will be sent to an employer who appears to have submitted an FPS late. It will remind employers that FPSs should be sent on time and that penalties may be charged in the future if they are not. Third one, a late payment notice. This notification will be sent where an employer appears not to have made a full payment on time. It will explain that in order to avoid potential penalties in the future, employers should bring payments up to date and ensure future payments are made on time and in full. It will also explain what to do if no payments were actually due. So then the fourth one is a notice reminding employers about late payments. Where an employer does not pay in full and on time again, this will be issued as a follow-up to the notice I've just described. It will reiterate the action required to avoid penalties for failure to pay. About the electronic messages then. The aim of the messages that HMRC are going to be sending out via these general notifications is to help employers comply with the pay-as-you-earn obligations and in particular get their businesses to submit and pay their pay-as-you-earn to HMRC on time. So nothing new there. This will help employers get ready for the 6th of April 2014 when in-year penalties for late reporting and late payment will replace the current end-of-year pay-as-you-earn penalties. HMRC says that it wants to receive payments and returns on time. It does not want to charge penalties. The messages warn that the employer may incur penalties in the future, even if they've done nothing wrong for 2013-14. So, for example, if they're a smaller employer taking advantage of the current relaxation for the honour before reporting. If this is the case, the employer does not need to contact HMRC, but you should be preparing for 2014-15. HMRC will update any wording that's required for these same messages from April 2014. Viewing the generic notifications then. So how will you view the message will depend on how you make real-time submissions to HMRC. If you make all your real-time submissions via EDI, Electronic Data Interchange, then your messages will be presented to you within your EDI software. If you, however, make real-time submissions by internet and you use commercial payroll software, you may receive messages within your software. If your commercial software isn't compatible, or if you use HMRC's basic Page You Earn tools to submit by internet, you can view your messages by logging into the Page You Earn online services. You can then select the generic notifications from within the notice summary section in exactly the same way as you might do already for your tax code notices. If you're using a mixture of EDI and internet, so for example, use EDI for your FPS submissions, but use HMRC's basic Page You Earn tools for your EPSs, as some payroll software do not provide this facility, or indeed earlier year update submissions, then you can view your messages by logging into the Page You Earn online services. You can opt to receive emails alerting you to new messages. Simply choose the notifications email option within the Page You Earn online services. If you currently receive email alerts for existing notifications such as tax codes, then you will also automatically receive email alerts for these generic notifications. And another thing, from the 28th of October, HMRC will also begin sending letters, and these letters will not be the electronic messages that I've just described, telling an employer that HMRC are cancelling their Page You Earn scheme if it was opened after the 5th of April, but has been inactive for 120 days. So please note that is an automatic facility that's going to happen. The aim here is to reduce the administrative burden on both HMRC and employers. So this process will cancel any Page You Earn schemes which are set up when a new business is registered after the 5th of April 2013, but are then never used. The process will not cancel any schemes registered as annual schemes. So we'd be very keen to hear from you if this does happen. HMRC understands that some external business processes are there to create a Page You Earn scheme as normal practice when a business is set up. So to help HMRC identify unnecessary schemes at an earlier date, additional questions will be asked of companies when a scheme is first registered. Many employers do set up a Page You Earn scheme, or rather many companies will set up a Page You Earn scheme because they think they may take on an employee in the future, because as we know, it can take up to 6 weeks before HMRC provide us with a Page You Earn reference. However, going forward, hopefully these additional questions HMRC will be asking will help the companies and organisations identify whether they really do need a Page You Earn scheme. So looking ahead, cancellation of a scheme. The information I'm about to describe is contained in the Employer's Bulletin, issue number 45, which was published in September 2013. From October, where HMRC have been contacted to set up a new Page You Earn employer scheme, if there's been no activity on the scheme after 120 days, as I've said, it will be automatically reviewed to see if it can be cancelled. So a scheme will be considered as having no activity on it where you've made no submissions using Page You Earn in real time. You've not made any payments to HMRC in respect of Page You Earn. You are not an annual scheme. There's no evidence that you want to claim a construction industry scheme deduction suffered. You've not received an advance in any way from HMRC. You've not had any periods of construction industry liability. There is no evidence that you've had any employees. There is no evidence that Class 1A National Insurance was due, which of course is for benefits in kind. Where none of these conditions apply, your employer scheme will be cancelled and a letter issued to your business address to advise you of the action that they have taken. Once the scheme has been cancelled, you will not be able to submit any Page You Earn submissions in real time. If your scheme should not have been cancelled, the letter covers who you should contact in HMRC to request that your scheme is reopened. mandating the scheme contracted out number, called the SCON, with effect from the 6th of April 2014. And again, this information is covered in the employer's bulletin, issue number 45. Now, this will only impact you if your clients operate a scheme in particular where it's a final salary, a contracted out scheme, but you may have clients who have that. There is an article on page 10 and 11 of the employer's bulletin, which outlines a change that affects the information that employers who operate contracted out schemes, what they report to HMRC. So from the 6th of April 2014, employers will have to report both the employer contracting out number, which is the ECON, and that's not a problem because we do that now, and the scheme contracted out number, the SCON, on the full payment submission sent to HMRC. So currently, the inclusion of the ECON on the FPS is mandatory, and as I said, that's fine because we have that information, but the inclusion of the SCON is optional. So from April 2014, inclusion of the SCON will be mandatory, something that we're all a bit disappointed about, because it affects the National Insurance category letters, category D, E, L, N and O. FPSs without SCONs will be rejected. To find your ECON and your SCON, you need to see your contracting out certificate, or you may need to contact your pension scheme administrator or ask your clients to contact their pension scheme administrator. This is something that's caused a real issue. Payroll software does not necessarily include the field, and more importantly, a number of employers don't hold this information, and certainly their payroll department doesn't. So if you are an agent acting on behalf of your clients, you're going to need to say to them where they can get this information so that it is provided to you to be able to put into the FPSs in time for next year. The main reason for doing this is, with contracted out for final salary schemes disappearing in 2015, HMRC needs to ensure that all the correct contributions in respect of the contracted out part are allocated correctly to employees' national insurance records. Exam or election scheme type employers. From next April, those who have examiner payrolls or electoral payrolls, employers are going to have to start reporting pay-as-you-earn information in real time. Now, it's important to stress this does not change the tax or national insurance exemptions or reliefs that are applied to these schemes. It's just that they're going to have to be reported in real time. So if any of your clients in universities or colleges and so forth operate these types of schemes, it's going to be important to make sure that they're aware that they're going to have to ensure that these people are put on a payroll to be able to report in real time. And finally, on or before. As many of you will know, and I hope many of you contributed to the survey that HMRC published around whether or not reporting on or before you pay employees has been an administrative burden or a cost burden, or does it make real-time information reporting more difficult? So many of you will have contributed the survey. So it's just to remind you that HMRC's response to the feedback that they've obtained, we hope will be out in the next month or so, which will give us an indication of where HMRC may go in respect of the relaxation that's currently in force. However, just a word of caution, please do not assume that HMRC will extend the relaxation. So you should, and your clients should, be working towards reporting real-time information on or before employees are paid by April 2014. Thank you very much.